standing by, and welcome to the Hospice New Zealand Genesis Oncology Trust Lecture Number 2. Our thanks to Genesis Oncology Trust for their continued sponsorship, which allows us to bring you these lectures. This morning there will be a presentation, followed by a question and answer session. I must advise you this conference is being recorded, and at this time all participants are in a listen-only mode. Our speaker today is Rebecca Jennings. Rebecca is a specialist physiotherapist in palliative care. She qualified in New Zealand and worked widely in both New Zealand and the UK before pursuing a career in palliative care at St Christopher's Hospice and St Joseph's Hospice in London. She presently leads the therapies team at St Joseph's Hospice, and we are delighted she can join us from there this morning to share her expertise. Welcome, Rebecca. Please go ahead.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be speaking to New Zealand, partly because I'm from New Zealand, and I've been over in the United Kingdom working for the last 8 years as a specialist physiotherapist in palliative care, most recently at St. Joseph's Hospice, which is one of the largest and one of the oldest hospices in the United Kingdom, being over 105 years old. And just to give you a bit of a context relating to where I'm working, at St. Joseph's we care for 40 patients in inpatient beds, and at any given time we're caring for at least 350 patients within our community services. And so my role as a specialist palliative care physiotherapist is to work with patients in a clinical context, and also to lead the therapies team, in which I have a team of 5 physiotherapists, 4 occupational therapists, a dietitian and speech and language therapist working part-time at the hospice, and a rehabilitation assistant that underpins that. So really a very big team for therapies and palliative care. And that's really informed our approach to working towards enabling a more rehabilitative approach to palliative care. And I'm very privileged to be talking to you about that today. So if you'd like to move on to the first slide. Just to give you some context, as we look to the future, palliative care services face a number of challenges, and many of these will reflect the growing needs of an aging population. We know that there are increasing numbers of deaths, and in a very important piece of research by Gomez and Higginson from 2008, they have looked at projections for future trends in terms of aging and dying in the UK. And their research suggests that by the year 2030, we're likely to see a 16.5% increase in deaths in this country. That's really related to an ageing population. And what's particularly interesting is if you look at the demographic of those people that are dying, by 2030, the number of people dying over the age of 65 will account for 86.7% of all deaths. And if you look at people dying over the age of 85, that's going to be a significant 43.5%. So what we're seeing is patients and people generally living much longer and dying at a much older age. And while this is UK data, what it does is it reflects trends of developed countries around the world, where we see a big increase in death rates over the next 20 years as we see the baby boomers post-World War II beginning to age and die. And I suspect that you will see a similar trend in New Zealand. What's of relevance is that while people are living longer, that longevity is compromised, and we're seeing people living with and dying from chronic conditions, things like heart failure, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and dementia being leading causes of death and disability in this age group. So with increased disability, there's a knock-on effect, and we see that patients are having increased dependence on their carers. And this poses challenges because with the aging population demographic, we're seeing a smaller proportion of younger people, less people working in care professions, and fewer family members available to actually provide that care on an informal basis. Equally, as patients are living older, their carers are likely to be elderly themselves, and so may also be having problems with chronic disease or disability. And so ultimately we see a knock-on effect, which is a greater need for healthcare services. And particularly as people approach the end of life, we can expect an increasing demand for palliative care services. So if you move to the next slide, when we consider this context and we look to the future proactively, we need to be asking, how can we meet the escalating need for palliative care provision in the future? But importantly, how can we maximize patient well-being and make sure that we maintain that quality for a wider group of people that stand to benefit from palliative care support? Next slide. So I would like to suggest that part of the solution may lie in developing a rehabilitative approach to palliative care, and that's something that we're going to explore throughout the remainder of the presentation. So if we move to the next slide, it's important really to acknowledge that rehabilitation, and particularly rehab and palliative care, is not a new concept. And for any physiotherapists that are listening to this presentation today, nothing that I say is particularly new or revolutionary. But the difference lies in the challenge of how we actually integrate rehabilitative approaches into palliative care, and in the words of Dame Cicely Saunders, to enable the dying person to live until he dies at his own maximal potential, performing to the limit of his physical and mental capacity with control and independence whenever possible. And I think this is a really unique quote, which in many ways summarizes rehabilitation and what we're aspiring to in this context. So coming on to the next slide, part of the challenge about rehabilitation and palliative care lies in understanding and promoting the role of rehab in this context. And I think for many people, certainly for people working outside of palliative care, rehabilitation may seem at odds and may feel quite contradictory to a profession and a speciality that's working with advanced illness, death, and dying. And it may be difficult to see where these two things interface. When we look at rehabilitation and palliative care, the definition and the focus is about attempting to maximize patients' ability to function, to promote their independence, and to help them to adapt to their condition. So it's very much grounded within the realities of advancing illness. And one of the ways that I like to convey it to people is really to think about habilitation, which is helping people to adapt, to come to terms with, and to function within their current situation. And by removing the re from rehabilitation, it strips away those unrealistic expectations of returning to a pre-morbid level of function, which is something very different and completely unrealistic for patients with terminal illness. Moving on to the next slide. So if you stop for a minute and consider the population of patients that we work with, the people that we work with every day, we know that palliative care patients experience high levels of functional disability. These examples from studies focus on cancer patients. And to give you some statistics, in a study looking at 500 cancer patients who had been living with cancer for 1 year, so not necessarily even palliative patients, 80% had some difficulty ambulating or moving around. In a smaller study looking at patients with more advanced cancer, they found that 100%, so every one of the 50 patients, had at least one problem affecting their function. A quarter of them had one. Over half of the patients had two identifiable problems, and 20% had three or more problems. And while I think that sounds quite a lot, seeing it written down, if you think about the real-life patients we work with that may have breathlessness, pain, weakness, deconditioning, cachexia, nausea, we begin to see the multitude of problems that these patients are living with on a day-to-day basis, and each one of them has potential to have a significant impact on the way somebody functions. In the next slide, we see that palliative care patients experience high levels of inactivity. Now, obviously, some of this is very much related to advancing disease, and we see that as people progress in their journey towards the end of life. But equally, we also see patients that are less active because of deconditioning. And deconditioning relates to people responding to symptoms, losing confidence, and for various reasons being less active, and as a result becoming generally weaker, which really runs into a negative cycle where they do less, they become weaker, they become able to do less. And this is an area where rehabilitation can make a difference and has potential to impact positively. So just to contextualize that, the study looking at COPD patients by Sandland in 2005 shows if you look at activity levels in patients with COPD, they have a 50%, close to 50% reduction in spontaneous physical activity. So that's getting up, moving around, walking within their house. It's not talking about exercise per se. And if you then look at the group of COPD patients receiving long-term oxygen therapy, which is an indicator of advanced disease and potentially palliative stages of respiratory disease, they have an 80% reduction, so a massive reduction compared to normal activity levels in healthy controls. And so that gives us a lot of potential to influence some of that. Moving on to the next slide, we see that despite this, most palliative patients express a desire to remain physically independent during their disease course. So if we move to the next slide to look at patient perspective, we see in the literature that there is a growing body of evidence to support that this is really important to patients, that the threat of progressive debility and caretaker dependency are among the most distressing concerns for patients with advanced disease. And while we may think that patients approaching the end of life are consumed by fears of dying, actually, evidence suggests that these fears may be eclipsed by concern over functional decline and uncontrolled symptoms. Patients are worrying about their ability or their loss of ability to do what's important to them at the end of life. And as we move on to the next slide, we see that this prospect of functional decline may be so distressing to the point that it can engender a desire for hastened death or even assisted suicide. Looking at a growing body of evidence that has explored people's reasons for pursuing assisted dying or a desire for euthanasia, fear of becoming a burden to others comes in among one of the most frequently cited reasons for their requests. I think this information really highlights the important relationship between functionality and psychological well-being, because in addition to losing that physical dimension of being able to move around and function independently, that really is the gateway to patients accessing a much wider realm, being able to interact with their environment and others in it, being able to walk around in their house, being able to leave their house, being able to have spontaneity in the things that they would do. And as people's function becomes compromised in the face of advanced disease, their world closes down, and through loss upon loss, we start to see that as function decreases, there's an increased incidence of psychological problems, anxiety and depression, and that's associated with activity limitation. In the next slide, we see from a carer's perspective how for people that are supporting these patients with advancing illness, as they approach the end of life, carers are often facing an increasing burden as they support them in their care. And I think the study by Elkington really highlights this in a retrospective study of bereaved carers for patients with COPD. 95% of the patients received help from family or friends in the last year of life. But when they really got into the detail of how much time carers were providing that support, the tasks ranged from less than 5 hours which was 15%, up to greater than 40 hours for 42% of those carers. And if you put that in context, that's longer than that's the equivalent of a working week. And if you've got patients whose carers are also trying to work or have responsibilities to care for other people and are then fitting in 40 hours of care provision around that, we begin to get a picture of that burden and to realise how carers potentially burn out in providing care to the person they love towards the end of life. So if we move to the next slide, I think we look at the question, in the face of advancing disease and all of the challenges we've just highlighted, how can rehabilitation possibly make a difference? And in the next slide, we see that one of the most important things to differentiate and one of the key messages that I want you to take away from this presentation today is that in patients with advanced disease, pronounced infirmity and poor prognosis must be distinguished from functional improvement, which is possible in most patients. So regardless of what condition our patients have and where they are at in their illness trajectory, there is often still potential for small improvements, and those small improvements can translate into really big changes in quality of life. And what's particularly important is as patients' disease advances, what we see is loss upon loss, which strips away their sense of control. And by being able to offer patients a more rehabilitative approach to care, we hand back some of that control to them, and we give them realistic hope and mechanisms to make some improvements that can really make a difference to how they are able to face their illness and to adapt constructively to some of those changes that they're experiencing. Research also suggests that if we get the approach of rehab right and really tailor that to the needs of our patients in palliative care, rehabilitation, which is focusing on eliminating or reducing disability, alongside maximizing function and independence, is appropriate for patients with advanced disease and very limited lifespan. So what I'd like to move on to a little bit now for the second part of this presentation is really looking at what a rehabilitative approach to palliative care looks like in practice. And I invite you to just take a pause and think about the environment that you work in and consider how rehabilitative you are and your team are in supporting patients to be empowered and be as active as possible within the restraints of their illness. Coming on to the next slide, one of the key things is that where traditionally rehabilitation has often been considered the domain of physiotherapists and occupational therapists, for it really to be effective, rehabilitation must be seen as an approach to patient care, and that requires involvement and buy-in from all members of the interdisciplinary team. If we look at this model, we see the patient and the family at the heart of that rehabilitative approach, supported by the multi-professional team. And this reflects a model of palliative care. This is how we work in palliative care, and there's much overlap in this approach. But if you consider the 30 minutes that a physiotherapist may have to spend with a patient on rehab in their day, compared to the extra 23 hours of the day that that patient may be lying in bed, we begin to see the importance of actually incorporating a rehab as an approach into daily care, and we see that that's what makes the difference to patients' daily lives and adds the quality. So to explore this concept in the next slide, I'd like to introduce to you a brief case study. And this is a patient that we worked with at St. Joseph's. His name is Alf, and he is a 77-year-old gentleman who has a diagnosis of advanced lung cancer on the background of a history of very severe COPD. He lives with his main carer and wife, Marion, and Alf has just been admitted to the hospice with a history of 2 to 3 days of increasing breathlessness, marked anxiety, Marion also very, very anxious, and both really struggling to cope at home. And following discussions with our palliative clinical nurse specialist that had been seeing and supporting Alf and Marion at home, together with some joint conversations with the community respiratory team, Alf had made some earlier plans that if his breathing was deteriorating, rather than going into hospital where he's had multiple admissions in the last year, he has chosen to come into the hospice for symptom control. Coming into the hospice, he's diagnosed with an acute exacerbation of a COPD and chest infection, overlying some progression of his cancer diagnosis. So what I'd like to do is really introduce to you some of the initiatives for rehabilitation that we've introduced at St. Joseph's and are looking at really promoting across palliative care. And to use Alf as a bit of an example about how some of these actually look like in practice. So if you come onto the slide of the functional assessment, as with any aspect of high quality care provision, it begins with impeccable assessment. And so this is where we started. What we have introduced is a functional assessment, which is a part of the core assessment that takes place for every patient that is under the care of the hospice. And this is an assessment which is completed by any member of the team. So often it's the first point of contact. It may be the clinical nurse specialist in the community. It may be the admitting nurse or doctor if patients are coming into the hospice. And what the functional assessment was designed for is really to establish a baseline of what a patient's normal function looks like. So for Alf, when this assessment was done the week before he came in the community and he was well, he was able to walk independently within his house with his frame. He had to pace himself because he got quite short of breath, but he was independently taking himself up to the toilet and managing all of his transfers. From a perspective of activities of daily living, Alf had his routine where he would get up and have a bath in the morning with some assistance from Marion. But beyond that, for things like cooking, shopping, she was providing all of his care. And what that assessment in the community did and does is gives us a baseline of what is normal and realistic for that patient. Because when Alf arrived into the hospice with an acute exacerbation, struggling with breathlessness and anxiety, he could not manage to transfer from his bed to the chair, let alone manage to walk up to the toilet. And what we had been finding historically was that patients would come in with uncontrolled symptoms for symptom control admissions, and this was having a significant impact on their functionality. But actually, the team wasn't adapting our level of support as patients' symptoms improved to facilitate them to be more functionally independent. And as a result, through very, very best intentions and high-quality care where the team was providing cups of tea and meals in bed, providing a strip wash for the patient on the bed, minimizing the amount of activity they had to do and maximizing their comfort and support, what we were finding is when symptoms were well controlled and we were beginning to think about discharge planning, patients' functionality had significantly deteriorated. And what this was reflecting was the deconditioning that was overlying disease processes. In some situations, obviously, disease is progressing and it may reflect real changes. But for people like Alf, if he came into the hospice and was nursed in bed for 3 weeks, then I can assure you that by the end of that admission, he would not be walking up to the toilet. And so this functional assessment brings it into our planning from day one and gives us a context to think beyond symptoms to normality, to functionality, to how that patient is going to manage in their day-to-day life. So that's one of the things that has helped to introduce rehab from the moment that we begin a relationship with patients. If we look at the next slide, this looks at a number of different initiatives that we've introduced to promote rehabilitation and daily care. And one of the big steps that we've undertaken is a program of enablement training on the ward. And this really is looking at supporting our nursing staff and healthcare assistants to feel confident to negotiate what is often a very fine balance between enabling patients to be independent and providing them with the very real support that they need. So, for example, some of the work was looking at mobility as a spectrum, and that's where just because a patient is not well enough to be able to get up and walk does not mean that they have lost all mobility. So transferring out of bed is an example of mobility. That may be transferring into a wheelchair and either self-propelling or being pushed, but that is still a domain of mobility and independence. Being able to change position in bed is mobility. And these small things make a very, very big difference to patients' comfort and quality of life. So if we think of Alf struggling when he first came in to transfer out of bed, but as his symptoms became better controlled and his chest infection resolved, with support, the nurses encouraged him to begin mobilizing. So this initially began transferring up into a chair for his meals, spending more time out in the chair, walking one way up to the toilet with a frame and support, and then progressing that to the point where he was able to return to walking to the toilet independently with his frame. And this makes a huge difference to patients' dignity. So if Alf had lost that, the necessity for Marion to accompany him every time that he needed to go to the toilet is going to make a huge difference to how he feels about himself, his role, and his quality of life. Following through on some of that training, what we've also looked at doing is joint nursing and physiotherapy assessment and feeding into care plans. And that's where it's bringing nursing and rehab onto the same page. So, for example, with Alf, building on the results of the functional assessment, looking at what we know we're aiming towards, and setting some goals. So that may be things like spending time out of bed in a chair, which we know from a nursing point of view is important to promote recovery from his chest exacerbation, but equally from a rehab point of view is important for maintaining muscle strength and changing position. So that's something where through collaborative working we've been able to introduce more rehab into daily nursing care. The other area we've done some work is with our medical team. And you may wonder where the medics come in to rehab and palliative care. But part of this was looking at contextualizing symptom control within a functional context. And that really was about making sure that we weren't just treating symptoms as the end point, that we were aiming to control patients' symptoms so that they would be more comfortable, but also to enable them to function for those patients well enough. And so, for example, with Alf, partly it was about improving his chest care and improving his breathlessness, but equally recognizing that with such advanced disease and refractory breathlessness, we may not get that purely and entirely well controlled, and what we need to be doing is beginning to promote function and support their independence alongside symptom control processes. Equally, for patients that have problems with pain, achieving good pain control when a patient's at rest and the doctors come around on their ward round is one level of symptom control. But taking that to the next level, where we're really considering how the patient's managing to move around and function and what impact their pain is having on that, is the complete picture. So within our approach, we really are looking at being truly multi-professional and having the whole team supporting ALF, supporting the patient to maintain that enablement focus. On the next slide, you see rehab groups. And rehab groups are an initiative of the physiotherapy team at St. Joseph's that we've introduced called Moving Forwards. And this is a program where every day we have a rehabilitation group that runs in the physiotherapy gym. And it's available to any patient that has had an assessment with the therapy team. And what we see with that is patients coming in from the community who may be coming in purely for a physiotherapy session to link in with the rehab group and then returning home. We see patients from the day hospice, and we see patients from the inpatient unit who are well enough to come down and attend. And the construct of the group is about getting people out of their environment and engaging in exercise which is tailored to their needs and enabling them to work within the restrictions of their illness and their particular impairments. So what we do is we begin with a seated exercise program, which runs for about 20 minutes. It's run by one of the physiotherapists and the rehab assistant. And what that means is that we can really tailor it to what people's different levels are. And for some patients, for some of the ward patients, this may be the only component of the group that they participate in. For others, following the seated exercises, they stay on in the gym to work towards personalized rehabilitation goals. This may be things like working on their ability to manage stairs, to build up their exercise tolerance, so that as they progress towards discharge, they can confidently and safely manage stairs at home. It may be things like working on breathing control and using breathing control techniques while walking in the gym, so we're actually putting them into practice and making them functional to support patients that have difficulty in that area. And I think rehab groups have been really positively received by patients, and that's been on a number of different levels. And on one level, I often find that patients are surprised to be seen by a physiotherapist when they come into the hospice. And they are more surprised to hear that we have a gym at the hospice. And they are also surprised to hear that we think that they have potential to be coming down and engaging with the gym. And part of that is because as their illnesses progressed, often our patients fall off the list of rehab services and acute hospitals or community teams because their potential for improvement is less than patients with other conditions. But actually, by giving people an opportunity to engage, it really does empower them and give them a sense of achievement. And this is really underpinned by a very strong social dynamic where getting people of various abilities in the gym together means they really support each other and they see, well, actually, if that person's giving it a go and look what they're dealing with, then maybe I can give that a go as well. So it's been a very positive step forward. During ALF's admission, he was coming down to the gym and initially was really only able to tolerate some of the seated exercises. But as his symptoms improved and his well-being picked up, we began by some walking between the parallel bars and progressed towards walking with his frame to really get his independence level up. Now, the next slide is the final one that I want to really present in this area, which looks at weekly timetables. And this is just another way of having a bit more of a rehab focus or promotion within daily care on the inpatient unit. This is very much guided by patients' normality. So it's about asking what their normal routines are, what they normally do at home, and trying to replicate that as much as possible. It's also about building some aspects of rehab into their care on a regular basis. So that's things like standing and walking with a healthcare assistant, coming down and linking in with the rehab groups, completing some exercises with the healthcare assistants, or whenever possible, we teach family members to support them with these things on the wards. But equally, one of the challenges we were finding was particularly if patients had had a reasonably long admission in the hospice and we were aiming towards discharge, that patients were losing confidence from going from a very supportive care environment often to a very isolated home environment where they may be home by themselves or having carers coming in several times a day as their support. And so at St. Joseph's Hospice, where presently we discharge around 50% of the patients that come in, so they come in for symptom control or psychological support, sometimes they come in for rehabilitation specifically, and then we look to discharge them home, either to their home or to nursing homes or care homes. One of the things that we've begun to introduce is graduated discharges. And this is where, for some of those patients, we introduce them going home for a visit with a member of their family or with a member of our team, a healthcare assistant or a volunteer, spending some time at home, coming back to the hospice. Then later in the week, going home again and maybe spending that time at home by themselves and then coming back to the hospice. So it's really bridging that transition of discharge. And that's been really useful, particularly for patients that have problems with anxiety. And so this was something we did for Alf, and it really helped both Alf and Marion make that transition from the support of the hospice to the independence of managing at home. So in the next slide, this is really to give you an overview and to really begin to consider some of the impacts that these simple initiatives, small differences that introduce more of a rehab focus to daily care, can begin to make to patients' well-being across all the domains of total care. So if we look at physical well-being, with Alf, we certainly saw an improvement in his mobility and function, and we were able to regain his ability to be independent with the activities of daily living that he was managing previously. Equally, from a physical perspective, the more active patients can be, it can help to reduce the incidence of secondary complications, so things like pressure sores, chest infections, joint contractures. As we were touching on earlier, the interface between that functional independence and psychological well-being is really high. So we were able to work with Alf to improve his confidence, to give him some strategies to manage his anxiety, and by being able to return to that previous level of function to maintain his dignity. From a social point of view, decreased burden for carers, so Marion able to have some time out as he was cared for in the hospice, but also to be reassured that he'd be able to manage to some degree when he got home without her additional support. And linking Alf in with the rehab group so he was less socially isolated. And once he went home, he was able to continue to come up to the hospice and engage with that group once a week. And I think from a wider spiritual point of view, it's just promoting that realistic hope and, importantly, reducing a sense of helplessness. So in the next slide, I think with this photo, it's really just to make the point that the days of physiotherapists in their white tunics, having patients in the gym in their pajamas, have moved on. And we are working in a context of evidence-based practice. So So to really pull together what I've been talking about today, I think we need to look at what evidence there is to support rehabilitation and palliative care. The next two slides are very busy, and they really are there to give you an overview of the research looking at rehabilitation and palliative care. And what I'd like to do is pull your attention to a couple of key studies and key features. In the first slide, which is looking at evidence relating to patients with advanced cancer, the study by Oldervoll in 2011, so last year, is a randomized control study which looks at 231 patients with palliative cancer diagnoses. And what they've done is they've randomized patients to an exercise program which involved 8 weeks of coming in twice a week for a 60-minute exercise session versus usual care. And what they found from this very robust study was that there was a significant improvement in functional status across a range of different outcome measures, an example of which was the 6-minute walk, which is looking at how long or what distance a patient can manage to walk within 6 minutes. So that was an improvement, p0.08. But equally, to capture the spectrum of disability, they looked at things like sit-to-stand ability, so really lower functional level scores, and these also showed an improvement. An important point to note is that they had a trend towards a reduction in fatigue, and often we worry about with these patients that getting them to do more will actually exacerbate fatigue and leave them more fatigued. But what we're finding, and the evidence is beginning to support, is that by having balanced exercise with rest, and that exercise may simply be walking the length of their room or standing up from their chair, it's within the context of their abilities and their wellness on that day, which can obviously vary from day to day, we begin to see changes. In the next three studies, so Yoshioka, Scala, and Marciniak, these are retrospective studies with reasonable numbers of patients, and they are using recognized functionality scores, so the Bartel Mobility Index, the Functional Independence Measure, and what they're showing is a 24 to 31% improvement. And that translates into real functional gains. So despite all of these patients having terminal cancer, metastatic disease, it's supporting the effectiveness. Equally, in the study by Yoshioka, we're seeing that 80% of those patients, so 80% of the 300, had some improvement. And from Montanini, the final study, we see that some of that improvement is taking place within 2 weeks, which is really important when you consider the short prognoses of the patients that we're working with. Another important factor from the Scala study is to show that that improvement in function was equated with a reduction in caregiver time. So they found with a 24% improvement that reflected independence that meant carers had a reduction by 30 minutes a day. And that has translation into reduced time for informal carers. So if you think of the 40 hours we were talking about earlier, we can knock off a number of hours off that, but also cost implications for patients receiving care through social services. In the next study, the next slide, this is looking at areas of non-cancer, and actually there's less specific research focusing on patients with palliative diagnoses in this area. But in large Cochrane reviews, we see that there is robust evidence to support a rehabilitative approach with COPD, heart failure, and multiple sclerosis. And they've acknowledged that these improvements are regardless of disease severity. However, this is an area that needs further research. So if we come on to the next slide, this is really bringing us back to the context that we were talking about at the beginning, looking at the challenges as we look to the future of palliative care in terms of increased demand on services and supporting patients as they live longer with greater disability. What I hope I have managed to convey today is the potential that rehab, a rehabilitative approach to palliative care, has to offer these challenges. So by being more rehabilitative in our care, we have potential to minimize disability, to maximize independence and dignity, to reduce dependency on carers, to promote the well-being and self-management within patients, which may reduce their need for health services. And this has a knock-on effect to reduce pressure on palliative care and supports people to remain in the preferred place of care, which is often at home. And underpinning this at a strategic level, there's potential for a rehabilitative approach to reduce cost to healthcare services and to the community. Okay, so I'm just going to bring you back to the final three slides just to wrap up, really. And I just put up a quote from Chevelle in 2001, who's done a lot of work looking at the interface between rehabilitation and palliative care. And what she suggests that in the context of such weighty and compelling issues encountered in palliative care, the existential domain and fears of approaching the end of life, the impact on relationships, uncontrolled symptoms, all of the things that we're dealing with, it may appear that the potential contributions of rehab may seem trivial or inappropriate. And what I'd like you to do at this point is really cast your mind back to the patients you were working with yesterday and think about what is important to them and what small things you could do today with those patients that may just enable them to do a little bit more for themselves, to be a bit more independent, a bit more empowered, a bit more dignified, regardless of their stage of illness. And the next slide is really just to pull it together to say that rehabilitation offers a proactive approach to palliative care. It has wide-reaching impacts, and those impacts range from the patient and the carer at the heart of our approach, but also at a more strategic level, looking at organisation, community, and society. And I'd like to just leave you with a potential challenge that there is great opportunity to be more rehabilitative in our approach to palliative care. Thank you very much.
This concludes our conference for today. We would like to thank Roberta Jennings for her presentation, our sponsors Genesis Oncology Trust, and everyone for participating. You may now disconnect.